you killed my brother, so me and my other brothers are gonna come kill you.
You don't actually even need to define what it is, so long as you can sufficiently prove to a jury that someone did it.
What we really want to do is discourage people from stealing and getting caught.
This is a larger issue than just justice. The impulse that something must be done, and doing something regardless of whether it makes any sense or not.
Philosophers. All right, David, what are we talking about this week?
We're going to talk about a topic that I'm shocked that we have not talked about before from all the other things about like authority and responsibility and the other things that we keep talking about over and over again. We somehow haven't done this. And if you, dear listener, can find somewhere in the history where we have talked about this and I just couldn't find it, then you get next week's episode free. So we're going to... We're going to talk about justice.
Justice.
Yes, Batman's favorite topic.
Indeed.
We're not going to talk about Batman. Well, we might.
We might. See, we're missing a lot of low-hanging fruit here on this podcast where we could just go take, what is Batman's philosophy? And
that's true.
What is?
We would probably have a lot more listeners if we did stuff like that.
Yeah. We'd probably
see us next week for, you know what, actually, we're...
okay. So I know we've talked about an ideal justice system before. We have talked about that.
No, we have not talked about that.
We not?
No.
Are you sure? It's in our
list of topics to consider doing.
What? How have we not talked about that? Well, oh, wow. Okay. We are... How have we not done this topic then? Because I do feel like we have talked about this before, but oh well. So let's talk about it, I guess. Do you have the American Heritage Dictionary definition of justice pulled up?
I do. There are many definitions, as one would expect.
I can see that. So what is a justice?
All right. We're going to just go through them all and find the one that's most appropriate. All right. Definition one is totally useless. The quality of being just or fairness.
Gotta love it when the definition has the word in the definition.
Well, it doesn't have the word.
Okay.
It's just. No ice.
Just on the rocks, you know? Or no, just neat.
Well.
Yep.
Okay, number 2A, the principle of moral rightness, decency. B, conformity to moral rightness in action or attitude. Righteousness. Okay, number 3A, the attainment of what is just, especially that which is fair, moral, right, merited, or in accordance with law. B, the upholding of what is just, especially fair treatment and due reward in accordance with honor, standards, or law. C, the administration, system, methods, or procedures of law. 4, I like how we're just going between numbers and letters here.
Right.
And it makes little sense if you're not actually looking at the structure of the thing. 4, conformity to truth, fact, or sound reason. Okay. Example sentence here. The overcharged customer was angry and with justice.
Okay. That's inconvenient, but go on.
Let's see. And then 5, which departs from all of these. A judge on the highest court of a government, such as a judge on the U.S. Supreme Court.
When you've been doing it long enough that you just become justice.
I am justice.
I am justice.
Okay. It's like being speed, but not...
Oh my God, I am speed. Yeah, so I think what really got me was this first definition, where it says the quality of being just, fairness. Well... In my head, the definition of just as the way people use it is, oh, right. Mm-hmm. Which is kind of what the second definition is, right?
Yes, morally right.
Well, more importantly, yeah, just is being morally right or decent. Just is the principle of that.
Mm-hmm. Right. Or the state of that.
Although I do think what's very, very interesting, and I think definition number 2 is definitely what we're talking about. Maybe number 1. I think the two sub-definitions under two are pretty much setting up the sides of the argument, potentially. The first one is just saying this is the principle of being morally righteous and decent, and the other is conforming to moral righteous in action or attitude, but you still don't get to the point of what right even means.
Interesting. Yeah, because I normally think of 3A when I think of, when I hear justice, that's what comes to mind. The attainment of what is just, especially that which is fair, moral, right, merited, or in accordance with law.
Sure. I think that's what most people mean when they say, like, yes, justice has been done this day. Mm-hmm. That's what they mean. Like, you know, and tomorrow...
Things have been made right. Because, yeah, to me, justice... The word justice gets used in a particular context. You could use it to mean, yeah, number one or two, which is things just being in the correct condition, right? The morally correct condition. Things are as they should be. We have justice. But usually when anyone actually pulls out the word justice, it's because some wrong was done that we are trying to correct.
Yeah. And more... interestingly as well, if we were to look at, say, the Wikipedia beginning article on justice, there's this other sense of it as well that I think gets conflated with it, which is, I'm just going to quote it, it says, justice in the broadest sense is the concept that individuals are to be treated in a manner that is equitable and fair.
Mm.
That's Wikipedia for you. It's just kind of like saying, oh, welcome to the right party. Yeah, right means not left, but it also means correct, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that's an interesting just coincidence, too. well, I'm just saying, like, I think the concepts of fairness and justice being right go together because we think fairness is right.
Yes.
And for example, often if we look at
something was unfair, that just implies that it's not correct.
Right. And if I were to just straight up Google, you know, symbols of justice, scales, you know, things depicting concepts of balance. It's you either get just the scales or you get a blind lady holding a sword and scales.
Yes.
And, there's this concept of fairness that's wrapped into it as well. And I don't know. I think there's a lot of things just kind of tightly knotted in here together that you can look at separately. But when you throw them all together, I think you end up with an interesting confluence of things, right? Back to this split on the definition of two real quick. The thing that I think is interesting about that is it kind of comments about what we even think rightness is, or what even is morally right, which I think anybody who's listened to this podcast long enough knows that you and I don't necessarily claim objective morals.
No.
But there are plenty of people who do, and you can't really have a conversation about really philosophy even, or ethics more particularly, without getting into the, well, but why is this right? Or why is this wrong? You know, and it's a very complicated question. And this is all a prerequisite to justice. And I don't necessarily know that we need to go down the rabbit hole of, well, this is how to be right or how to be wrong. Because there are entire religious texts that still haven't even figured it out and have to be supplemented to give examples, you know, and nuance.
To say nothing of philosophy.
Yeah, exactly. Like I was reading about like Islam today, and the Quran is what is right and what is wrong. And then you have, you know, the Hadith, which is, well, this is how you would live your life in case this is right and this is wrong isn't obvious to you.
Mm-hmm.
So an example is, oh, pork is haram. Don't eat it. It's evil.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, but one of the first examples in the Hadith about it is, well, what if I'm starving?
Mm-hmm.
Is it better to die or is it better to eat the forbidden meat? Well, it's better to eat the forbidden meat.
We decided.
because we also decided that it was just wrong to eat this meat for reasons. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, so it's easy enough to just say, well, this is right and this is wrong. Even if you do have the luxury of just pointing to, you know, a mythical figure in the sky or a holy book to say this is what tells me what's right or wrong, you still have to deal with the same problem of justice, which is, but how wrong is it? If you do this wrong, and then I think this is where we'll get to with justice, which ultimately what a lot of people mean by this is, you know, we can all agree whether or not something is wrong, but when justice gets involved, that's why you have to bring the scales out. How wrong is it? If I were to lay this transgression on one side of the scale, how far is the scale going to dip down? And then the secondary question, which is what do I need to put on the other side of it to make it fair again? How do you right a wrong, you know? You grinned when you looked at something. What did you see?
I found something.
What'd you find?
We've talked about justice before.
We have?
Yes.
When?
Episode number 15.
Well, it's...
it's been a long time.
It's about 215 episodes ago, so yes. I think we're fine to finally rehash it. And I'd be willing to bet that this is probably already off to a better start than that one was.
Probably.
We'll find out later. So, if anything, you now having the luxury of knowing what the title of this is going to be, unlike we do at this moment because we're making it, this might be called Justice 2 Electric Boogaloo or something like that. So, if you're getting confused having listened to this point, sorry. But I don't know that we talked about this part of it. You know, I think we may have went real heavy on the easy thing, which is talking about what is right and wrong. Mm-hmm. But the real question, I think, around justice is, even if you come to an agreement on a moral framework, how do you weigh it out? You know, and then or how do you decide, you know, who should get to decide? There's all these different things that come into what it even means for something to be righted, because that's really what we're talking about. If anything, justice is the answer to what happens when things go wrong, and arguably even when things go right. I think that justice and reward kind of go hand in hand. We just normally always think about it in the negative, being humans, right? If you do this, such will happen to you, you know, and it's almost always assumed negative, but this goes for the positive as well. What do you get? What is just for you if you're a good person, right? So where do you want to start? Which side of the pendulum do you want to start on? The you did bad and we need to figure this out, or you did some right and we need to figure this out? Because I feel like they both have their own interesting kind of scenarios we can talk through.
Start with bad.
It's a good human. We shall.
I feel like that's the more usual case.
Yeah. So this, I think, is where we start thinking about, okay, well, what we usually think of justice today is you broke the law. Because for the sake of argument, the law is what we have determined to be the standard of what is morally good or what is morally bad, depending on the kind of law. That's what it's
supposed to be, yeah.
That's what it's supposed to be. It's supposed to be our prescriptions on how people should be. And I know that there are several different kinds of laws. Well, I say that. There are some laws that are not... I'm trying to find the name of it. There are laws that essentially just point out that if, you know... here's a good example. So, theft. Have you ever looked at what the law says? Like, what the law against theft is?
I don't guess so.
Let's see. I want to quote it because it's interesting. So, here we go. So, first of all, we don't call it theft. It's called larceny because reasons.
Of course it is.
So, essentially, any person found guilty of larceny or wrongful appropriation shall be punished by martial, may be punished as a court martial may direct, and they shall be guilty of larceny. That's it. It doesn't necessarily say that it is morally wrong, necessarily.
Right.
It just says that if you are found guilty of larceny, then you have committed larceny and you shall be assigned this punishment, which is kind of just outlining, you know, if you do this, then X will happen. You know, if you do X, Y will happen.
Right.
Whether it's good or bad, this is just...
Well, this is, yeah, this is like the luxury you can get away with in a court as well, is that you don't actually even need to define what it is, so long as you can sufficiently prove to a jury that someone did it, right? Then that's good enough.
Yeah.
Because even if you do give a definition, you still have to, you're going to have to, you're in the same situation again, right?
Right.
Because if we formally defined something like theft as like taking possession of something without permission of its rightful owner, right?
Right.
Then, okay, well now we have to prove to the jury that you took possession of it. Well, what does it mean to take possession of it? Like, that's the thing. You're proving different words. So why don't you just prove the word that you meant? And right. The only time that we need to define things is when it's not going to be obvious.
Right.
Or if we want to specify like a narrow scope of something, like, okay, when I say this word, I really just mean this particular thing.
Exactly. But there are other laws that are moral laws, like the Ten Commandments. Thou shall not steal.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't go into saying what the punishment is. It just says don't.
You are not to. Yeah.
You are not to. It is wrong to do so. Figure it out. Like, and I think that's very, very interesting, because this, I think, leads to the first kind of maybe separation of philosophies when it comes to how do governments deal with crime?
Mm-hmm.
What does justice mean in the sense of a governance, right? And I feel like you can take either approach. There are religious, very heavily religious governments that their laws are almost entirely morally laden, where it's just this is wrong. And the law and the statutes as written may not even go into what punishments are need be happen.
Mm-hmm.
And so even if you have a jury trial, the jury trial is a lot more about, you know, what do we do now that you've been convicted? Like there's a lot greater emphasis on how to punish people.
Sentencing, yeah.
Than there is whether or not you actually technically did anything wrong. Whereas in the United States, I feel like a lot of our laws are much more prescriptive, where
it's... Yeah, we do codify the punishments for things usually.
Well, we also codify up like if what it means to have even committed this crime.
Right.
Without... While maybe implying that it is wrong, never making a moral claim that it is wrong necessarily.
Right. It's just unlawful.
Exactly.
And that's all we need to worry about.
Mm-hmm. And I think this is an interesting thing, because it's an extension of where do questions of morality get answered, right? And I think if you go all the way back to the definitions of justice, the second one is very interesting. It's conforming to the moral rightness in action or attitude. The conforming part here, I know it does not mean this, but it's essentially just saying in a democracy, laws are laws because we decided, but we decided and we can undecide that at any time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's no reason why in any country with a democracy, like the United States, we could just take that law off the books. We could just decide that, no, stealing's not wrong anymore.
Right.
And
yeah, we decided... It's not so bad after all.
Right. And you can more rightfully do that because you never said it was wrong in the first place. You just laid it out as a standard.
Yeah, we just said we're going to punish you for doing it. And then now we decided we're not going to punish you for doing that anymore.
Mm-hmm. And that ultimately comes down to the authority. Who said you can't do it? And in a lot of moral laws, they're usually appealing. The reason I think a lot of them are religious is because you have to appeal up. Well, God said so.
Right.
Now, the upside to that is that you don't even need to explain why it's wrong. It just is. Period. Get over it. Now we're going to figure out what to do with you. Cut your hand off. Fine. We'll do that. You know? But you can never unlaw that law.
Right. It's decreed from on high. Yeah.
Exactly. So if perchance you actually didn't hear it from the big man upstairs, but you claim that you did...
No take-backsies.
No takesies-backsies. That's right. You know. Good luck. Hope it works out.
Hope you made a good decision.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because the divine law is perfect and it doesn't need to be changed ever.
Except for when it does.
Except for when it does by the divine. But they could have always just gone back and made it always that law anyway. So why do they decide to change it? Not the point. But if you have a prescriptive law system, you don't even have to, you dodge the question entirely. Is stealing wrong? Maybe. But if you do it, this is what's going to happen. Just letting you know. Now, don't get me wrong. I know there's probably people out there that'd be like, well, but it pretty much means it's wrong because the thing that they're going to do to you isn't good. And?
Yeah.
But.
Well, but also, but we can also think about it from the perspective of, like, just pragmatism, right? We're trying to achieve a goal, right? Whether it's wrong or not, we don't want to live in a society where it is considered acceptable for people to just come take your stuff.
Right.
So, as a practical measure, we're going to agree it's okay to punish people who do that, because that's going to dissuade people from considering doing it in the future.
Well,
and it doesn't matter if we think it's wrong or not. It's, we don't want anyone doing it to us, so we're going to hurt you in some way if you do it.
Sure. But you could technically be a little bit more accurate there, if we're being pragmatic. What we really want to do is discourage people from stealing and getting caught.
Yes.
Because we want people to think about better ways to steal to avoid getting caught. Otherwise, they'll be punished for getting caught. And I think that's probably one of the biggest arguments against this type of law system, is that there's no conviction. Mm-hmm. And you're not incentivized to... The law has no comment on its moral status. And so you have to attach the getting caught part, which is just implied as well. But that being said,
because no one's going to punish you if they can't catch you.
Yeah. Exactly. But that, I think that also leads to a different whole thing, which is making sure that you get caught before you get punished is also pretty important. Because one of the things that is at the luxury of, you're bad for doing this and we're going to mainly focus on how to punish you, is we don't need to focus as hard on whether you actually did it or not. Which happens. Inquisitions existed, you know, where we can, whatever it takes to get the conviction, we'll justify whatever we did to get it.
Yeah.
So
I think that's one of the places that I wanted to go, is how far are we willing to go for justice?
That's a good question.
Right. What is worth sacrificing in pursuit of justice? I think in modern Western societies, we largely value individual rights.
For now.
And really the purpose of having a justice system is to try to protect those rights from either the petty criminals who violate them, or even to protect against the government who violates them, sort of in roundabout and kind of confusing and weird ways. But I mean, getting those things righted, I mean.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, one of these things, or one instance in which there's a conflict, right, is people have some sort of a right to privacy.
Sure.
In our system. But also, the courts value the truth, mm-hmm. in principle anyway. And so, in the pursuit of truth, right, they need to sometimes compel people to divulge information in one way or another.
Mm-hmm.
But this can violate their privacy.
Yeah.
Issuing a search warrant violates somebody's privacy.
Subpoenaing someone.
Right. Subpoenaing information. Right. So but these have to come from a court order, right? So a judge has to decide that this is more important. And sometimes there, and we want people to take these so-called proper avenues to compel information. And in the pursuit of that, we have laws that make it so that if you wrongfully obtain evidence and submit it in court, that can be thrown out.
Should be.
Right. If you spy on somebody, illegally, right, without a warrant, then that evidence is thrown out because we want to make it where there's not even a temptation to do that, because if it's found out that you did that, then it becomes all for nothing anyway. But sometimes we don't care about that.
Yeah.
Like, there are some legal situations in which the truth is just considered so important that your rights to privacy don't matter.
Yep. Like, another one, search warrants. I could just kick the door into your house and find your drugs,
mm-hmm,
without obtaining a search warrant. And on paper, that was the absolute wrong way to do that. And that shouldn't be admissible. But sometimes it's good enough. Like, I feel like this is where the scale analogy comes back in. What's it worth? You know, like, most people would say that, oh, you kicked this guy's door in, you broke down his door, you broke all of his furniture to find a dime bag of marijuana. That's not worth all the trouble you caused them. But if the person was, like, butchering children, and you just knew it, but you couldn't prove it, but you kicked the door in to get him, and they're all the carcasses are laying there.
The community is going to look the other way
on that one.
Right, because you just found a monster, and this is exactly what we needed to lock him up. Yeah.
Yep. And I think the analogy you often hear about when it comes down to this is, and I think there are people that very valid, like, that with full conviction believe one of the two following things. Better 100 guilty men walk free than one innocent man suffer. Or better, the opposite, better 100 innocent men go convicted than one guilty man go unpunished.
Mm-hmm.
And I think your opinions about justice, well, your opinion about these two statements says a lot about your opinions about justice.
Mm-hmm.
Because it either shows how much you value, it just shows how much you value justice over freedom, and you kind of cannot have both. You need one for the other, arguably, but you can't necessarily put them at the same level of priority.
And yeah, it's just like any, and this is something we've had on our list to talk about for a long time, is like a system of rights. Right, the rights have to be in a system because they will often come into conflict with one another, and you have to decide which are more important.
Right, and it's hard. In addition, there's an additional layer of difficulty. The systems of justice that we put out, and which are supposed to be emblematic of, like, our philosophy about justice, it's like the Quran. It's just what should be, but things happen that blur lines and make it difficult, you know? But the system exists to persist. And so if, depending on what legal system you have, like in the United States, we have a common law system, which is a double-edged sword itself. The law in practice deviates quite a bit from the letters that are written because I think most people who've ever watched a court show or a real trial before, you know, you hear about precedent a lot. That's a word that comes up in America that may not come up in other places.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because in our legal system, it's not just what does the law say. It's how have other judges in the past and how have other trials gone in the past about similar issues. And so, like, a lot of what a lawyer might do is, you know, if I'm a lawyer and I have a client who shot someone and they're claiming it was self-defense, but the law as written, and if you were to have a layman look at it, they may not agree. Well, but what other cases happened that were very similar to this? Did they think it was wrong then? Did they think it was right then? be pretty shameful to be inconsistent. Mm-hmm. You judged. You don't want to be the judge right making laws from the bench. And then judges are strongly encouraged to follow precedent for that reason. They're not required to, for the record. But they really want to, because that's just kind of how their system is. And right. appellate courts encourage them to do so and mm-hmm. things like that. They can be sanctioned for being wild and stuff. So yeah, it's complicated. You know, we may have just said out at the very, very beginning, yeah, obviously killing people is like shooting someone is wrong, but there have just been so many cases where we decided that it wasn't, that we eventually wrote a law that says it wasn't, except in these cases, but then the blurred lines in that scenario just get kicked down the road. Mm-hmm. But those things matter if in this particular instance. So like in the case of the kicking the door in to find the dime baggie of weed, if you say that that's okay, you essentially are now taking what the law means in practice and lowering the bar pretty significantly to what other things can be kicked in. And this is also complicated because you as an individual on a jury or as a citizen in the community might think that you're super opposed to weed and drugs. It's your most important issue. So yes, of course it was worth it. But what about later on when they kicked your door in and they found your private pictures and stuff?
Mm-hmm.
And well, technically, you know, none of that was, maybe there's laws against that, having that kind of material. Well, you don't think that that's wrong. And you would love to be able to say that even if it was wrong, that's not, they never had a good reason to kick in my door to look. Well, that's too bad now. That's on the same level as the dime bag of weed to other people,
mm-hmm.
you know? That's the other thing you have to be careful with in this case, in this particular system, is that common law kind of says we'll figure out the nuances as we go along. Like, of course, there are going to be cases where what does it mean to trespass, you know, like
mm-hmm.
what does it mean to murder really, you know, like, and we don't prescribe them up front. We have to go figure them out as we go along. And then that builds kind of this backlog of the public opinion through history, which is interesting to go with. But I think almost all of the decisions that come out involve those scales of, you know, was it worth it at the time? But those scales are only being applied at that time, and they're never considered again later on when they're being brought back up as precedent. You don't take out, well, let's dust off the scales back then and see how they weighed out. Now let's apply inflation to today's scales and see if it still works. That doesn't happen,
mm-hmm.
you know? And also, I feel just absolutely terrible for people who end up being punished for crimes that later on end up not being crimes because they're not owed anything for it.
Right, because it was illegal at the time.
At the time, yeah. God, that must be frustrating. Yeah,
you're expected to obey the law all the time.
Mm-hmm.
At any given instant, whatever the law is now, that's what you're supposed to be not doing, I guess.
Right. So, I don't know. It's a tough question. I, of course, err on the side of freedom, naturally.
Yeah, I think anyone who listens to the show knows that. Yeah.
Sure. But how much? You know, that's the other question. So in our analogy from before, the baby butcher, we'll call him, that's pretty horrifically awful. Or no. Let's just do this. So I'll take my analogy from earlier. 100 innocent men for one guilty man, or 100 mm-hmm. guilty men for one innocent man. Well, how big is the population? You know what I mean? Because if there's only 1,000 people, the argument about sacrificing that one innocent man for 10% of the guilty that you're going to just release back into general population, it's a bit of a different thing than if you're in a population of hundreds of millions where it's like, yeah, well, we can't catch them all. But I definitely, as an innocent myself, I never want to have to fear for my life from the system, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think that's, but it, you know, this is an analogy, right?
Mm-hmm.
But that's just my perspective as an innocent. What about the perspective of the victims? Because I guarantee you there are no more people out there that are all have a big old hard on for burning at the stake people than victims.
Well, yeah.
Rightfully
so. That's understandable.
So. Yeah. Yeah, we've all been there.
I don't know, I'd say rightfully so, but understandably
so. In their
so.
Mind, rightfully so. I think it's, when I say rightfully so there, I mean, I think it is righteous to want justice.
Mm-hmm.
In severity for a wrong, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how you actually go about achieving that and just throwing anyone up there on the stake is another question, mm-hmm. maybe. But I think that if something terrible happens to you and you're just cool to let it slide, that's kind of weird, you know. I don't think that's exactly, I wouldn't necessarily call that right.
No.
But, so, what about the victims? How much do they matter? Do they matter more than just being one more person that's an innocent in our moral calculus? Or is that just like your opinion, man?
I mean, it is kind of just your opinion, man. Like, it's feelings, right?
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, the victims were really victimized. We're going to assume that. And so we agree something ought to be done. But I think this is a larger issue than just justice. The impulse that something must be done.
Mm.
And doing something.
Somebody do something. Yeah.
Regardless of whether it makes any sense or not.
Yeah. Well, let's still take on the question of how much do the victims matter? Let's take it in an example, because I think this will be interesting. I am walking down the street and I get struck by a car, and the car is being driven by a drunk driver. None of this is in contest. We all agree.
Yep.
Even the guilty party agrees that they were drunk as a skunk and ran me over. Now I live, and now it comes time to sentence this person. We've confirmed that they are in fact guilty, but now it comes time for the real justice to be done. And I get up and I say, well, judge, as a Christian man, I believe in forgiveness. I think we should forgive this man. How would that be different than just a random population person getting up there and saying, hey, as a Christian man, I think, you know, forgiveness. Is that going to change the judge's mind at all? And should it change his mind at all?
Yeah, I think it comes down to what's our goal, right? Mm-hmm. Is our goal just to make the victim feel better? If our goal is just to make the victim feel better, then if you, the victim, get up and say, I think we should forgive this man, then that's the correct choice, right? Because that's your choice and we're trying to make you feel better.
Mm-hmm.
If a rando gets up and says, we should forgive this man, but you're still angry, then we should not seek forgiveness, or we should not pursue the avenue of forgiveness, because that's not going to satisfy you. But if our goal is to discourage bad behavior like drunk driving, then we don't really care what your opinion is. We already decided that our opinion is that this guy needs to be punished, as an example.
Yes. But we're talking about justice. Where in justice is this concept of deterrence? Because I would argue that deterrence isn't justice.
You're right.
It's different. Now, I'm not saying that in justice systems, deterrence doesn't show up as a strategy.
You're right, though. That's a good point.
So, back to my original question.
Mm-hmm.
In which scenario, what should happen to the man? Should it be the same regardless of who says it? And what should the outcome be? They receive less of a punishment or more of a punishment? Like, I think we can all agree that the rando pulling off the street to come have a word about it's
totally irrelevant.
Totally it's irrelevant.
It's just someone giving his opinion, yeah.
But I put him here because does this victim matter for justice's sake? Do they really matter?
Okay. Justice, the state that we're trying to achieve, is the state in which all is right in the world, right?
On paper, yeah.
Yeah, in the most ideal case, that's what we're trying to do. or at least as close to that as possible, right? Because the drunk driver cannot unrun you over, right?
Fortunately.
We cannot just undo that. So, then it matters what happened to you as a result of that, right?
I had $100,000 worth of hospital bills to write me again.
Right. So, arguably, justice would be to compensate you for that, or to make the criminal compensate you for that.
If we're doing it pure calculatory justice, then yeah, sure. Like, say I can quantify.
It doesn't matter what your feelings are.
Yeah.
It's like, well, it is not just that you had to pay for somebody else's bad decision.
Sure.
I.e. drunk driving.
Yep. But I don't want the judge to make him pay me, even though I could just give it back.
You want unjust things. That's another dangerous avenue.
Mm-hmm. So that's just that, right? Now, what if I instead say that I want him burned at the stake?
That is also an unjust thing that you want, right?
Sure.
No, you are getting paid for your medical expenses and maybe a little something else for your distress.
Mm-hmm.
But we're not burning this man for,
sure.
For running you over.
But arguably, my feelings about whether how right or wrong it was is meaningless compared to the objective thing. Because when you ask me what's wrong with me, it's like, well, now I have to give you an objective figure. I can prove that the doctor charged me whatever, right?
Mm-hmm.
Other things get a little bit harder. Like, what if I died?
Right. What's that worth?
Now, yeah. So say I died and my widow gets up instead and says, I want him to be taken out and cuffed and left on the side of the road, and I'm going to run him over. That's what I want. Is that just?
Maybe.
Maybe.
It seems funny.
It does.
I can't necessarily see anything immediately wrong with that.
This is how posses worked back in the day.
Right.
You killed my brother, so me and my other brothers are going to come kill you, you know? But honestly, I mean, but arguably this is where justice systems came from, is that got out of hand.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't like that. We need referees in here, because otherwise we're going to devolve into long-standing feuds that have collateral damage. And in a civilized society, we don't want people out there running each other over with cars.
Mm-hmm.
For settle scores, you know? And, you know... But at the same time, it's like, I think to separate back off the original question, what my widow would want is irrelevant. Like, what she wants is irrelevant. You can answer the question of what is just or not without considering the victim. But that being said, I do think that it would be ignorant to suggest that when the victim of the crime gets up and speaks, people will shut up for them.
Well, yeah.
You know.
Because it's in their name that the court has gathered, right?
Is it? Where in the law does it say that?
I mean, it doesn't in the law.
Right. But when you are taken to criminal court, who did you transgress, really?
Well, criminal court, yes. You transgress the state.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's true.
Now, and that's a whole other thing. Justice in the criminal court versus the civil court means very different things.
Right. There's a question, right?
Mm-hmm.
In a justice system that is truly just, whose goal is justice, in what name should the court gather?
Right.
Should it be on behalf of the victim to get to the bottom of what's true? Well, I guess it's on behalf of everyone, right? Because it's also on behalf of the accused. Because we don't necessarily know that the accused actually did the thing, right?
No, the court convenes in the name of the truth.
In the name of both the victim and the defendant.
Yes.
To get to the bottom of who wronged who.
That is where it convenes. But once a judgment, well, then this is the other thing too. In civil courts, a judgment is not reached until the damages have been dealt with. Mm-hmm. Like good old Judge Judy would say, judgment for the plaintiff in the amount of mm-hmm. or whatever. So that is the judgment. That is the making it right. Gavel struck, issue over, move on. But the first half of the court of any trial is purely there for the sake of the truth. We are here to discern the truth of what happened and how does it compare against the law. And you're found first, you know, the jury does not judge you. The jury finds you guilty or innocent.
Right.
And then if you are guilty, then the judge gets to announce his judgment. Mm-hmm. And at that point, you're guilty. So I don't think there's anything wrong with saying that we may convene for the truth, but we come back for the judgment for someone.
Mm-hmm.
So in criminal court,
someone is society.
Yes,
whatever that means.
You wronged society, which is being represented by the state. So in that case, the victim especially does not matter any more than any other member of society because they have transgressed against all of us. So we found and we decided, and now we get to decide what to do with them. And that's, I think, why a lot of the prescriptive laws already have built-in punishments, because we realized it could get out of hand real quick if judges just had to figure it out, because that one person is having to figure out just what to do about it. Like, how do I make sure that society feels justified, you know? As an individual with no bias, mm-hmm. you know, that's the reason why for things like petty larceny, the judge can't say string them up. I find larceny to be particularly egregious.
Mm-hmm.
String them up. No. We decided in advance what the punishment range ought to be. It's, you know, up to this many days in prison, fine, no less than this, up to this, right? That kind of stuff,
mm-hmm.
you know, but that can't be decided in the case. You know what I mean? Like that kind of defeats the whole purpose of this common law thing, right? To go out and say, you know, we want the courts are here to figure these things out and to deal with the moments and work out the details. Well, but you're boxing the details in. And I think one of the best examples of this is not necessarily a law, like a range dollar amount necessarily, but something else the government loves to do when they stick arbitrary dollar amounts on things. The $200 tax stamp on certain firearms, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that was a lot of money at the time.
In the 30s when that was written, yeah.
Yeah, oof. That was a hefty tax. But every year since then, like what even is $200 in like what, 1930s? What even was that? Yeah, that's $3,500. No. $3,600, almost $3,700. At the time, I mean, that puts almost everybody out of range, and you know, that's multiple times what the thing is actually worth, mm-hmm. to just do the thing you want to do to it or to even own it, right? Now it's less than 20% in a lot of cases,
mm-hmm.
you know, so it's like, oh, so just by factor of inflation, this thing has become less serious, because the right, same thing
that doesn't make any sense, yeah.
But that's how it works, because that's how it is for some of the crimes we've got on the books.
Right. There's just an amount there.
Yeah.
There's one of those in the Constitution.
Oh, yeah?
Yes. I'm not going to remember what section it is. But I can't remember if it's like your right to a jury trial or something like that. Anyway, there is a dollar figure somewhere in the Constitution.
Hmm.
like if the dispute, it's like it's either unless the disputer is a more or less than a certain dollar amount.
Oh, it's like $20, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, it's a low number. Yeah.
Yeah, like I think this set up like some kind of thing for this is starting to this is jogging my memory.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I really do think this is something like civil courts must be convened in order to resolve matters of $20 or more, or can only be convened to, like it was like some kind of floor where it's like, look, you cannot haul someone into civil court over $1.50. Okay, that's ridiculous. It's not worth it. I feel like that's what it was.
Okay, there are two mentions of the word dollars in the Constitution. Let's see. Section 9, powers denied Congress. The migration or importation of such persons as any of the states now existing shall think proper to admit shall not be prohibited by the Congress prior to the year 1808. But a tax or duty may be imposed on such importation not exceeding $10 for each person.
Oh, that's a different thing entirely.
Yes, it is. Second one is the one that we were thinking of. Seventh Amendment, in suits at common law where the controversy shall exceed $20, the right of trial by jury shall be preserved.
So I could haul you into local court and over $20 and $20 and 1 cent.
Yes.
And demand a jury trial to hear me out.
Right.
I just thought of a great counter-economic method that we could dig into effect. That would be a lot of fun. But back to the whole point about justice. What's the point in assigning a punishment up front if, A, we're not making a moral claim, and B, that it actually, you know, is supposed to be figured out at the time? You know, it doesn't really seem just to me. Arguably also, I mean, I feel like justice systems, honestly, outside of civil courts, like I think civil courts are still a lot more in alignment with what we consider, what most people would consider to be justice. Like when you hear someone say to someone else, I'll see you in court, they're not talking about a criminal court. Like they're not saying I'm going to go get the cops involved to arrest you and make sure you go to court and have to deal with this. No. What they're usually meaning is I'm going to haul you in front of civil court where we're going to hash it out in front of a judge, or if it's more than $20, that is, and we're going to figure out exactly how much money you owe me for something, you know. And a lot of the civil court claims end in dollar amounts paid back and forth, because that's just, there's almost a science there, and usually you're bringing them up there because it costs you something, you know. And that's the easiest one to objectively claim. And I don't even know that civil courts even care. Like, civil courts don't handle any of the other things, like murder or theft or anything like that. But what if they did? Because that would be more accurate to justice,
mm-hmm.
right? Wouldn't it?
Yeah, I think so.
Is that a better idea?
It depends on the implementation details.
Let's talk about it. What's some of the details that are hanging you up right now?
Who has to pay?
What do you mean?
Like, for the trial.
Oh, both parties do. Or whoever brings the suit does initially, anyway.
Well, that isn't necessarily conducive to justice.
Or it's just brought out of your taxes. We all do.
I think that's closer. Yeah. I mean, both of us have problems with the institution of taxes. But,
sure.
But I don't think it is... I don't think it is just for a victim to have to front money to seek the rest of justice for themselves.
Fair. So what if it's initially taxes? Taxes are brought in to cover, like, we're going to do taxes to for 1 year to get all the courts going, right? To open them up and get them going. We're gonna issue a loan to the court system to get operating. But then after that, the courts collect it as a part of the trial from the guilty or the innocent in the event that the guilty party is not found to actually be guilty.
Yes, I think that would, yeah, something like that to discourage false accusations.
Mm-hmm.
Because, yeah, because if anyone can just bring a suit as they can,
yeah,
then, yeah, you need some means of discouragement of false accusations.
Although, arguably, if it's worth it enough to you, you could get a loan to hire a lawyer to bring the suit.
Mm-hmm.
If it's worth it. And you could also bring that up as part of the damages that you're suing for as well. It's like, I had to hire a lawyer because this jerk did this and I had to bring him to court. So not only did he break my $5, my $50 vase, which is has to be more than $21.
More than $20, importantly. Yes.
Yeah, right. But I also, so I want him to pay the $50 for my vase and, oh, my $10,000 legal fees.
Right.
Yeah. That would also strongly encourage people to work it out against amongst themselves too, because I don't know about you, but if I did in fact break your vase and I just really didn't want to pay you for it, if you threaten me with a lawsuit, I'll just pay you the $50. I don't want to have to pay that plus your legal fees.
Yeah, that already exists, right? Going to court is already expensive, and so we have this, yeah, parties prefer to settle out of court rather than actually go through an expensive trial.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, now here's the other question that never really gets asked about justice because we just assume it's fine. Homeless guy burns your house down.
Mm-hmm.
Great. You've now took him to court over it and he owes
There's nothing
you
to recover.
Yeah. What do you do about that? Now the court can compel them all day.
Right.
But the court's also not going to make any money because presumably the guilty party pays the court fees to keep the courts operating.
Right. But if he has nothing,
what do you do?
Yep. That's a sticky question.
Isn't it? Because is it really just to make someone pay something that they could never actually deliver on in the first place? Like, and when I say just, I mean, like, is justice ever dealt? Like, if my house got burned down, I'm homeless. I'm not with this homeless person. And they don't have the money to buy me a new house. I'm still out of house.
Yeah.
As, you know, even though the judge said, you owe me this much money. When is justice actually done? When I get the money or when you're telling me I'm owed the money? I mean, I think most people would say when you get the money, right.
Yeah. Making a declaration doesn't actually do justice.
Yeah. Like if you were like, hey, where's that $100 you owe me? I'm like, oh, hold on. And then I wrote on a piece of paper, I owe you $100 and hand you like, good, we're all settled up then.
Yeah. No, we're not.
Yeah. No, we're not though. Yeah. What do you do about that? And now how incentivized, and you can threaten this person all you want, but how incentivizes this homeless person to go out and get a job, which by the way,
to be able to pay for your house that he chose to burn down, by the way.
Yeah. And when he clearly didn't even bother getting a job for his own self first.
Right. Yeah. Zero.
Mm-hmm. So what do you do about that? Can you bring him back to court for not paying you money?
But what's that going to do?
Exactly.
It's just going to cost you more money.
Yeah.
To pay for more lawyers.
So what do you do? What do you do when justice can't be gotten? I.e., someone kills your father, then commits suicide.
Right. What do you do?
What do you do?
Life's unfair.
Life's unfair. Yeah.
I think that's really the only answer. Because
mm-hmm.
you just can't do it. Because I mean, like, you know, like it's there's a few tempting options, I think, on the victim's part. To but it all comes down to we should do something.
Ooh,
right.
Yeah.
So like, what you want the court to just let you beat him up or something like that? Like, is that gonna make you feel better?
No.
And then there was a time where we would just
say prior to 1850, you know,
where we just send this person to debtor's prison and they just and they make pennies trying to pay off the debt, which they won't,
as a slave, pretty much.
Right.
Yeah.
But that is that justice? I don't think so. It's closer.
It was my house. I'll take the pennies.
Sure.
You know, F that guy. Like, shouldn't have burned my house down. Like, better work hard. They get sticky though, like, yeah. But you know, for sure, because also
I guess my point is that it is unlikely to actually return you the money.
Yeah.
So is it really worth it?
I'm still pretty mad that my house was burned down.
Yeah. But again, now we're listening to the victim's feelings again.
True.
Which we decided is irrelevant.
True. Good show. I still think something should happen, because otherwise the homeless people would rule out of fact that they were in squalor.
Would they though? The homeless would rule, you think?
If rule they from squalor, yes. They don't have any... Well, they only have what between their hand and their mouth. You know what I mean? They have that long before someone's like, hey, give me that. That sandwich, we're gonna go liquidate it to get a couple pennies to pay this guy until he's paid up. You know, I don't know. It is hard. I do think that it isn't just necessarily, because, and now we're talking about retribution versus restitution, mm-hmm. which is restitution is them paying me the money they owe me, and retribution is I want them to suffer because I suffered.
Yeah.
Yeah. Pay me back in kind suffering. I'm going to buy you a house just to burn it down. You lived in it for a few years. So you know how it feels. It's pretty wasteful, you know, retribution is.
Yes.
Even though courts weirdly acknowledge it as something that's necessary. And I think that's the other thing, too, is what happens when it's a matter of public outcry, right?
Well, yeah.
So, for example, what happens when person causes a general ruckus enough that we need an organized way to expel this person from society and not just form a mob and run them out? Or is that the preferred way to do it? Like, if there's just a general nuisance, like, imagine like the most annoying clown person ever that just does random things, like he glues you to door handles and he, you know, puts whoopee cushions everywhere. Like, it doesn't seem very bad at first, but then he starts doing it to everyone and it's constant. He plays loud music all the time. Like, nothing that actually hurts anybody, but to the point where enough people get sick enough of this person that someone has to do something, mm-hmm. you know. And in my mind, that's always been you got to keep in mind that, yes, you are afforded all the rights and protection. You're afforded all these rights, but the protections of those rights are guaranteed by all of us. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, it's the all of us. Well, what happens when you put yourself in a situation where the all of us don't show up when your rights start getting trampled? So think about it. You know, this is where vigilantism kind of shows up. And I think we've already talked about that. And it comes to justice is you can dole it out, but you better get it right. Because unlike the judge, who we allow to get it wrong sometimes because it's just his job, if you go out of your way to volunteer for this task and you screw it up royally, you might find yourself on the wrong end of the people, you know, mm-hmm. yourself, you know. So, but then you also kind of start sliding back into that cycle of, well, one vigilante popped up and he took care of that one guy, but then he became a real nuisance, or maybe he did it in a particularly gruesome way we no longer kind of agree with. Mm-hmm. So someone else comes up and removes him from the equation because he was being, you know, no one liked the fact that there was a person that did that, and then that person, you know, and before you know it, it's just a chain of people until you've got the only person that's willing to do anything anymore, and then they're back in charge. So I don't know. It's obviously not an easy question. I mean, it's not even easy for people to work this out, right? Mm-hmm. Families have arguments around the concept of justice all the time. I mean, that's like some of the first arguments kids get into. Mom, so-and-so touched my things. Mom, you know, or, you know, you give the age old one is where, okay, you kids are going to split this cake because I have one left for dinner. The age old way of resolving that debate, which makes everyone happy, is one of you is going to cut it and the other gets to pick the first piece because we all agreed that that's fair. It's kind of genius, really.
That really is a genius strategy. Yes.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I don't know that you can do that with this.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. It's a hard question. And I think that's just kind of it. At the end of the day, it just depends on what everyone else thinks. you know, I think the biggest discovery of this whole thing was that the victim actually does not matter all that much, even though we, out of empathy and pity, you know, may want to change it and want to err with someone else. That's all it is. It's pity, you know. Tough question.
It is tough.
Yeah.
It's a hard problem. One of the hard problems.
Arguably one of the hardest problems. And honestly, that's why I think judges don't get much love. You know, nobody really likes them. Like, they don't really like lawyers because it's one of the hardest jobs to please. And that's also why it's one of the few jobs that even if they are elected, in a lot of instances, don't have term limits, because it'll be very, very easy for people to want to kick them out once they start doing things that they don't agree with. And it's like, well, we kind of acknowledged early on that we do not want them to care about what is popular. We want them to care about what is right, you know, and sometimes doing the right thing is not popular, even, you know, especially at the moment, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I think we beat that dead horse pretty well. What about you, dear listener? What do you think is fair? Do victims matter? Do they have a say? How do you deal with people who you can't punish punitively? Let us know. We might listen. Or you might find yourself like the victim whose opinion doesn't matter. Until next time. Philosophers.
Philosophers. If you like the music in this episode, please check out Jippy on Bandcamp at jippy.bandcamp.com.
Philosophers is supported by viewers like you.
If there's a topic you'd like us to discuss,
or a topic you'd like to see revisited in the future,
please let us know by contacting us using the methods in the description,
or in the comments below. Thank you for listening.